Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today, Martin, this is supposed to be one of those 15-minute podcasts where me and you just shoot the breeze, but it's not going to be like that. Sure, it's not.
No. We've got more to discuss, more important stuff to discuss.
Yeah. Look, these podcasts cost money. There's a platform. There's a lot going out. Really, really proud of the work of everybody, including Caroline's latest podcast, which she tells me I'm not going to be able to edit because she hasn't sent it to me yet, and I'm actually terrified. When you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about. But right now, Caroline, when this comes out now, please just
don't make a fist at the editing.
Stop! That's all. Anyway. Look, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It helps all of these podcasts survive. It really does. We're delighted to be joined by Lilith Carroll, who describes herself as a genderqueer trans woman, but she's also the National Community Development Officer with the Transgender Equality Network of Ireland, or as you and I all know them, the Tenny Group. Lilith, thank you so much for taking this opportunity to talk to us.
No trouble at all. Thanks for having me.
No, it's look, first and foremost, we spoke just briefly before we came on, and I referenced that, you know, there is this demand almost to import a war that, and I mean war is probably the wrong word, but these arguments that have been going on in the UK and the US for a while, and we just have a demand to almost import them here for a mainstream purposes, and it doesn't fit. How must it feel as a trans woman to see this desire to happen and becoming so public in the last, I'd say, week and a half?
It's quite infuriating, I suppose, just to kind of watch it. It's like a lot of conversation is kind of happening above our heads, and nobody's actually wondering or asking about what trans people are having to deal with right now, or what we actually want to discuss or talk about. I definitely don't want to be spending the next 5 to 10 years answering questions about primary school biology, or trying to explain to people that we actually exist. You know, I'd rather be discussing issues in terms of what's happening in terms of healthcare, and there's been, you know, controversies happening in the last couple of weeks that have been just completely overshadowed by cis people just talking about us, or, you know, amplifying transphobes. It's bewildering.
Yeah,
And
that's it exactly. I suppose myself and Martin were kind of conscious when, like, 3.5 years ago, sitting down to start a podcast, that it was, it's hardly representative of two lads, two white men, straight white men going into this. And we were very conscious of the kind of, and the phrase was often used, nothing about us without us. But it must be crazy to sit there and watch, for my mind, some, you know, again, cis people, but also people of a certain privilege discussing what is, in a way, your right to exist. In some senses, it is actually basic as that.
That's what it kind of seems to kind of boil down to. Is I don't know. Maybe we're just some sort of theoretical thing that people feel that they can have an opinion on. Like that, we're some sort of imaginary. I mean, on one side, maybe. Just like this monster in a changing room. On another, these people that we have to kind of explain are human beings.
That's kind of it, isn't it? That everybody feels. Oh, no, I don't mean everybody feels that they should have an opinion, but those who are involved in discussing it feel that they have a right to have an opinion, whether you exist or not, or whether you have rights or not. And, you know, Tony said, yeah, we're two cis, you know, middle-class males. And you know, but it's us that needs to look at this and say, what's really going on here? And, you know, sexuality is a bridge, and we're all on it somewhere. Nobody is all one way or all the other way. It's a nice aspiration, but, you know, it's not there. It's really what business is it? Who else's business in it? You're living your best life, doing everything you can, not bothering everybody, just fuck off and mind your own business, really. Is that not the case?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think, you know, they like, when it comes to kind of what trans people need and what's required, I think, you know, the issues that trans people are dealing with, it revolves around bodily autonomy, essentially.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that people are acutely aware of that in Ireland. You know, trans people have been there and during marriage equality, although you maybe didn't hear very much about us. We were there during the repeal campaign. And again, you didn't necessarily hear very much about us, probably about this because of this notion of a Middle Ireland, which I think in the terms of both referenda have been thoroughly disproven. And, you know, when you look at, I guess, you know, what trans people need through that lens, you know, that's where it becomes kind of glaringly obvious, you know, the pathologization of trans people and, you know, languishing years on waiting lists. Then when you are assessed, you know, you're asked sexually explicit questions about your sex life and in order to receive, in many cases, the same HRT that a cis woman would or a cis man would need from their GP. You know, that's an impasse there. And then the fact that non-binary people just don't have no legal recognition, that trans people under 18 have to go through massive hoops in order to get their birth cert corrected, and trans people under 16 don't have that right.
Simple things like open bank accounts are a disaster. You know, if you want to just open a bank account in your name, it could be very difficult for you. And when we say things like hashtag trans rights or human rights, that stuff, actually, the granular detail of that is, as you said, access to healthcare, access to supports, access to day-to-day things that many people, well, most people in terms of, again, back to the cis people, take for granted. Is it not frustrating then to see that, you know, when you mentioned repeal and you mentioned marriage equality, and like, we'd be very aware of the fact that we'd spoken to people in the trans community who were very supportive of, you know, moving for that. And when you talk about bodily autonomy, where it seems to have hit a snag is with the trans community. Is that not frustrating?
Yeah, it's infantilizing. It's disempowering. You know, the fact that, you know, the trans people have to be essentially traumatized in order to be able to, you know, have control of their own bodies, you know, is a national scandal, I believe, you know. And yeah, I mean, the discourse that seems to be kind of happening over our heads, I mean, you know, maybe part of that is because trans people block TERFs, they don't engage. And as a result, the ire of many of these Twitter accounts, which tend to emanate emanate mostly from the UK. Well, they're targeting prominent lesbian and gay people instead, it seems to be, you know, the CEO of Amnesty and, you know, say, like Zivit Kamikaze, you know, they're pawning on them. And you have to think about, you know, well, maybe there's a link there. Yeah. And it isn't so much about, you know, sex-based rights, which is something that was invented about 5 years ago. You can't find it on Twitter before that.
But isn't it crazy that the language that they're using now is the anti-feminist language and the anti-gay and lesbian language they used in the past? They've just re-weaponized the language and now directed it at people in the trans community. But there are an awful lot of air italics feminists who are using this anti-feminist language, which has simply been adapted to attack the trans community.
Yeah, I suppose like a lot of trans people will, or a lot of kind of TERFs kind of have coined this term gender critical. Mm. I mean, I consider it non-genital extremists, to be honest, because that's kind of all that it boils down to is what's between your pants and or between your legs. And, you know, your value as a human being is predicated upon that. And so that, you know, so then we have like producers in prime time going on to 2FM and referring to women like me as intact males, going into changing rooms and,
yeah,
you know, freaking out grandmothers or whatever it is. And when most of the trans people I know are, you know, even that the idea of that, they're petrified by it anyway.
But again, so does I'm going to speak in terms of, again, from our own experiences and say, there's a knowledge gap there as well for large parts of the community, which is why the Transgender Equality Network work is so important, because then you can actually help bridge that knowledge gap. But I think Martin is right. There's also, when you have that with bad faith players who are just weaponizing old arguments and then redirecting them upon the trans community. I mean, we spoke to people in the intersex community recently, and if they go to hospital, for example, they can find that that all the junior doctors are called in because they're a case study, and they're not really asked for permission on that. They're not brought in on the inside of that conversation to say, listen, you are 3% of the population, you are an outlier, would you mind if we talk through? No, this is just, by the way, there's now 12 people standing at the bottom of your bed. And, you know, but I've had that conversation and my jaw hit the floor. But once you see it, you can't unsee it. So when it comes to that education piece, how do we break through the noise of what is now a really slick, organized TERF organization? Let's tell you, they're sophisticated insofar as they know the arguments and they keep pushing, and they are bloody relentless.
Yeah, they're well funded. I mean, you know, Naomi Klein has recently kind of tweeted about the kind of the funding that comes through evangelical right wing kind of organizations in the States, and they're funneling money into kind of English speaking countries. So, you know, being aware of, you know, where, you know, that these resources are coming from somewhere, similar to what it might have been in the case with right wing organizations funding certain organizations during referenda in this country and trying to influence kind of outcomes. But I think that, maybe rather than, defaulting to, kind of prominent cisgender journalists, maybe, you know, listen to what trans people actually are talking about and have to say.
In other words,
not just on trans stuff either.
Yeah,
many other stuff and topics of interest. We actually have lives outside of this.
When I asked you to do this today, I was embarrassed, saying, "Oh God, I'm asking you just to talk about it again, as opposed to ask you to talk about, you know, it would be great to have Lilith on to talk about what happened in the doll, as opposed to what, you know what I mean, the sort of stuff that the routine stuff, as opposed to, oh Lilith, can you talk about why you think you should be Lilith, you know, and that sort of stuff. Really, we need to get beyond that as a country, and I'm very conscious of that as well. But you did mention it a couple of times now, the battle for healthcare. It does seem to be relentless. Every time you know, people have to crowdfund to get healthcare. They have to go through every hoop to go. And even if, you know, as you've outlined, that if you want access to things that would be considered normal, you might have to see several different types of doctors and consultants just to get what would be given, maybe from a GP. How frustrating is that now, and how do we fix that?
Well, I mean, there's international guidelines on trans healthcare called WPATH or WPATH, and they're work kind of looking into as to what the kind of the scientific kind of and the research is out there in terms of kind of trans healthcare. So that's all there. I suppose there is a report in the government somewhere. They seem to have lost it and then found it, about what needs to be done in terms of trans healthcare in Ireland. I know that there's maybe a couple of clinicians and psychiatrists that aren't very happy with it because they refuse to engage. But what seems to be happening now is that the trans community is being left out of that process now. And maybe that these reports need to be published. Like in my personal kind of kind of dealing with healthcare. It's, you know, it's been a very tough, grueling kind of process, being kind of left out in the cold for 18 months with no healthcare, and kind of the impact that that had on me, and then go into, a system where, you know, I felt dehumanized and through much of that process. But, you know, you can get out to the other side of it as well.
Yeah, I accept that, but it shouldn't be that many barriers. I mean, surely to God, we talk about in terms of equality, and we talk about a republic of equality. You know, the Tánaiste, who was then Taoiseach, said this republic of equality. That means access to things on equal basis. And you're talking about bodily autonomy. I do want to ask one question, and feel free to tell me to mind my own business. We talk around the issues, you know, as you said, people above your head are talking about trans issues and the rest of it. What do you want from your life? And what do you want from your friends and your neighbors? That simple as that. It's basic as that. What would you want to be seen as, and how, as people, your neighbors to support you on, and how would that feel?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. I like to brew mead for fun. I collect records.
Yeah.
Or I've started to. Getting married in a couple of weeks.
Congratulations.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
So that's kind of what my life is revolving around, you know, and just sitting in the sitting room, just throwing a few records on, and kind of planning for a wedding. So, I mean, that's kind of generally what my life revolves around. And that's kind of, if I would just want more trans people to have the space in their heads to be able to just get on with their lives, rather than having to expend so much energy in trying to, counter a well-funded and, dangerous attitude that seems to be kind of entering into Irish media right now. You know, we just don't need it. We've other priorities, you know, than kind of, as I say, doing primary school biology lessons for cis people, you know. If you want to talk about biology, talk to a biologist. No.
There is kind of an age gap on this as well. Am I correct in this, that in school, younger people are learning to be more inclusive? It's those who are older who need to learn more, and that they could actually take lessons from their own kids on how to be more inclusive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's always room for like a intergenerational kind of discussion and exchange, you know. And there's, you know, maybe things that young people can offer in terms of their experiences and their attitudes in life. And there's, you know, there's plenty that maybe older generations can do as well. And having kind of intergenerational continuity is something that I'm very passionate about. I'm working with a couple of young trans women at the moment in kind of developing actually a podcast. A lot of the discussion is with kind of, I guess, trans folk of different generations, and kind of talking about themselves as individuals, what their interests are, what their life achievements were, and, the different struggles of different generations, and also ways that we can kind of just, develop community, get together and get to know each other and just care for each other, you know.
So you mean just being in society, participating, and actually being welcome to have a bit of crack, yeah?
Yeah, a bit of community, you know. It's great, you know. People kind of go on about self-care, and then maybe that's been kind of commercialized a lot, but and it is important. But I think community care is so such a huge resource. I mean, just bringing like I'm witnessing it now because we're kind of in the middle of recording, but you know, you bring some young people together and people of different generations who have that kind of common thread of transness, I guess, and just putting them together and letting them talk, that's when the magic happens, and it's always just really inspiring.
And I just come in before Tony says it. Yeah, you have three generations here. Yeah, I just before he says it.
Granddad. Lilith Carroll, I have really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope the next time we're talking, we are talking about things in the broader sense of sharing your opinions and your views on wider society, and not just having to justify what is going on. And you know, at the call on people, I would say go check out Tenny Tweets, please, on Twitter. Go look at the website, the Transgender Equality Network. They're doing fantastic work. We need to, there's a knowledge gap, and the knowledge gap is on our side. It's not on the transgenders community. And if that's where the fear is coming from, and you know what, fear is just generally a block of your own ability to look at your own privilege. Let's not weaponize it, and let's not do what Martin does with everything and have a fight. Isn't that right, Martin?
Lilith, have a great Christmas.
And all right, same to yourselves.
And enjoy, and have a brilliant wedding.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Listen, folks, thanks for listening. Again, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And we will be back with you guys very, very soon. Actually, recording this evening with Hannah Salah in Gaza. Looking forward to that. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.